certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. And entering into a ship of Adramidium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. And when he had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And when we sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete over against Salmone. And hardly passing it, came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lasea. Now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them, and said unto them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenicia, and there to winter, which is an haven of Crete, and lie toward the southwest and northwest. So chapter 26 ended with the conclusion of Paul's hearing before Agrippa. Festus, of course, concluded that Paul had gone mad, that he was out of his mind due to much learning, that he was perhaps too deeply invested within the Jewish teachings. Paul countered that with an appeal to Agrippa to verify what he had been saying and the fact that it was true. A number of the facts of historical facts concerning the death and resurrection of Jesus, and as well as teaching of the prophets. Now he pressed that question to Agrippa, and Agrippa gave a political type answer. In other words, he did not directly answer Paul's question. But he gave an answer that essentially ended the hearing, saying, Paul, you've almost persuaded me to be a Christian. After that, they counseled together and they declared that Paul was innocent of any crimes that would be worthy of death or of imprisonment. And Agrippa further reinforced that he could have been released if he hadn't appealed to Caesar. So that brings us to chapter 27. And in chapter 27, we begin the journey to Rome. The whole chapter is given to this journey. In fact, 44 verses are given to the voyage and the shipwreck, and he still hasn't gotten to Rome yet by the end of this chapter, and it takes a little while into chapter 28 before he makes it. Now, as we have gone through the book of Acts, we've seen Luke giving various travel accounts, and we've noticed that he typically tends to compress those accounts, and then he will expand just at obvious points of emphasis. However, this account that he gives here is detailed and it is extensive. So as we look at the account in chapter 27, the whole account is structured in eight parts that form four cycles of pairs. All right, so the first part of the first cycle gives a difficulty. And what we find is that the first pair of each one of these cycles gives us increasing difficulties all the way to the shipwreck. The second pair of each cycle gives us an increasing intervention by Paul to a divine intervention, and ultimately Paul as well as those on board the ship being saved from the sea. So verses 1 to 8 are the first part, the beginning difficulties of the voyage. That pair is formed by verses 9 to 12, which is Paul's first intervention, which fails. Then the next pairing is verses 13 to 20. There we see the storm and a loss of hope, all those on the ship. And then in verses 21 to 26, we again see Paul intervening. And the next pair comes with verse 27 to 32. We find there that the ship is drifting. Verses 33 to 38, Paul intervenes again. And then the last pair begins with verse 39 to verse 41, which gives us the account of the actual shipwreck. And verses 42 to 44 concludes that pair where Paul and all that are on the ship are saved from the sea. And that's according to the word that Paul had spoken. So obviously we're just looking at this first pair here this evening. And that's verses 1 to 8, which show the beginning difficulties of the voyage. And then verses 9 to 12, Paul's first intervention, which actually fails. So let's begin here with verse number 1. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. Now, the first thing we notice in this verse is the use of the plural pronoun we. And it's the first use that we have seen with it for a while. Luke, that means that Luke is with Paul at this point, and it appears that he continues to be with Paul up to his arrival in Rome in the next chapter. The last time that we saw the plural pronoun was in chapter 21 and in verse number 18. That was when Paul had reached Jerusalem, but just prior to him being arrested at the temple. Now, it is oftentimes thought that it was during these 2 years' time that Luke was going back and forth from Caesarea and Jerusalem, and when much of the work was done in the writing of both the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, that he was gathering information and verifying information and such during that time. And it seems very reasonable that that was the case, as it does seem like the book ends with Paul imprisoned in Rome. Luke went that far with Paul and was with him there for a time. So that certainly seems plausible. But here, it seems that Luke has joined back up with Paul and is actually going to sail with him from Caesarea and will be with him until they get to Rome. When he says that it was determined that we should sail into Italy, this determination that he refers to is talking about the arrangements that was made for the prisoner transfer. So we are told also that there were other prisoners on board, certain other prisoners. So I've read that appeals to Caesar were actually rather rare. And it's more likely that these other prisoners, rather than being a group of them that had appealed to Caesar, which would be a very rare occurrence indeed, though we don't really know anything historically about them, it seems most likely that these other prisoners were being transferred from Caesarea to Rome because they had been condemned and actually were most likely being shipped to Rome in order to be killed during the gladiator games, which was obviously one of the forms of execution. Now, again, that is some speculation, but it does seem very probable. The prisoners that are mentioned here, along with Paul, were under the command of Julius, a Roman centurion. Now, Julius was not in charge of the ship or this ship or any of the other ships that they sailed on during this time. He was rather in charge of the prisoners. And of course, being a Roman centurion, he did have some measure of authority and probably would at least have some sway when it came to decisions concerning the ships. The ships, however, would be under the command of the owner and the captain of the ship and not of Julius. Now, passage would be arranged on other ships that could take them where they wanted to go. This ship that they were boarding, we read about in verse number 2. And entering into a ship of Adramidium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coasts of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. So they boarded a trade ship and they set sail. So this would likely be a ship that would be making frequent stops at ports, but it was headed west and it's getting them going in the direction they wanted to go. And of course, at one of the ports that they stopped at, they would likely be able to make a connection and transfer to another ship that would get them along further in their journey. Now, obviously, from Caesarea to Italy, they could not find a ship sailing straight there, and they would have to transfer to another ship when they could. Now, you notice that Luke notes here that Aristarchus was with them. Now, Aristarchus is mentioned as being from Thessalonica. We read about him also in chapter 19 and verse 29 and chapter 20 and verse number 4. Paul also refers to him in his letters, both the letter to the Colossians and the letter to Philemon. And he refers to Aristarchus there as a fellow prisoner. And it seems that Aristarchus was with Paul for a considerable amount of time, both in Caesarea and in Rome as well. Now, I understand it that prisoners could have friends or family that stayed with them and that was ministering to them in various ways according to what the Roman officials allowed. And it also probably would be according to what sort of security they were under. If they were a maximum security type prisoner, obviously that would be much more limited. Paul, though, we have read about that he was given much lighter security. He was given a lot more freedom and liberty, though he was still in custody. And so he was allowed to have Aristarchus with him. He was also allowed to have Luke with him. And that indicates that Paul had received favorable treatment from Festus. And perhaps maybe the opinion of Agrippa and the advice that he had given that, you know, he's not done anything worthy of death or imprisonment. And if he hadn't appealed to Caesar, well, he could have just simply been set free. And perhaps that had some influence on Festus. But nevertheless, he seemed to have treated Paul with a great deal of kindness in this. Verse number 3. And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. So they put in the port, and this was up the coast from Caesarea. And Luke mentions the courteous or the kind treatment that the centurion gave to Paul. Now, from the account, as we read through it, it seems that Paul was given some liberty even on the ship. In fact, it seems that he was kept above deck rather than being kept below in some sort of hold. And we can see that interspersed throughout the accounts here. Paul was given the liberty, when they made port at Sidon, he was given the liberty of visiting his friends there. Now, likely this refers to the church that was there, as we know that there were churches in Phoenicia. Chapter 11, verse 19, chapter 15, verse 3 has some references there. So we know that there were some churches in Phoenicia, and most likely this would refer to those of a church at Sidon. And they would likely give him provisions, food, clothing, perhaps even money, things that he would need along the way. And I've read various accounts of how much that a prisoner under this situation would be responsible for their own passage and their own provision and what have you. And it seems that at least a certain amount of it did indeed fall to them, if not the whole thing. Verse number 4. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus because the winds were contrary. Now, Luke does not say how long that they stayed in the port. And it probably wasn't an excessive long time, maybe a few days, not an extended time. But they did set sail again. And this verse here in verse 4 now gives us the first note of trouble in their voyage. And as we go through the account, obviously that trouble is going to increase. It's going to get worse until they finally come to the point of shipwreck toward the end of the chapter. So this is certainly foreshadowing greater difficulties to come. They've set sail and they're facing a contrary wind. He says that they sailed under Cyprus, and the word that is used there, the term means that they sailed to the leeward side of the island of Cyprus. The leeward side is opposite, obviously, of the windward side. And so in this case, they sailed to the east and to the north of Cyprus. Saying that the wind was contrary means that the wind opposed them. In other words, this wasn't their original plan. And in fact, it made them have to go more miles in their journey than they originally had intended over the sea. So the original plan was probably to sail to the south and the west of Cyprus in a more direct route. But because of the opposing wind, which would have been a westward wind, because of an opposing wind, they had to go around the leeward side of Cyprus. Verse number 5. And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. So they had sailed in adverse conditions and arrived at port at this city of Myra. And Myra was a customs port, that I understand it. It was a major port, in fact, for the grain ships sailing from Alexandria. Some have suggested that this voyage would have taken a couple of weeks in adverse wind conditions, but Luke doesn't really note the time for us. Verse 6. And there the centurion found the ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. So Julius found a grain ship of Alexandria. As was mentioned, this was a major port for the grain ships sailing from Alexandria to Italy. And so he found a grain ship. As I have read and understood at the time, that Egypt supplied a third of the grain to the Roman Empire at this time. So the ships had to cross the Mediterranean in order to get the cargo to Italy. And there was a couple of routes for doing that. And if conditions were favorable, one ship could cross, launching out early in the spring, could cross and be back and make a second passage before the winter time when the crossing was closed. Now, as it was autumn at this time, and it was drawing toward winter, this tells us this ship must have been making its second crossing, trying to get to Italy. In other words, they would be doing all that they could to get there in a hurry, and that may have to do with the reason why that Julius selected this particular ship to get on. So Julius secured the passengers, and he put his prisoners, or he secured passage rather, and put his prisoners on the ship as passengers. Verse number 7. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete over against Salmone. So Luke notes again increasing trouble in this passage. They're fighting against contrary winds as they are trying to make progress. He notes here that they had sailed slowly for many days. They had toiled on. In other words, it had taken a long time to cover the distance that they had covered. Now, the passage at this time of year was difficult because of the prevailing winds, that they were west and northwest typically, and trying to sail west would be sailing into the winds, west and north both. So the wind was contrary to them once again, forcing them to sail to the leeward side of the island of Crete, and again adding more time and more distance to their voyage, making it even slower. Verse number 8. And hardly passing it came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lasea. Luke notes that with great difficulty they came to the Fair Havens. This was a small place, but it was indeed a harbor, and it was actually situated with protection from the mountains, so that it would have been a safe harbor to winter in as far as the ship was concerned. So we end that first part of this cycle. We come to the second part of the cycle where Paul intervenes but fails. And that begins with verse number 9. Now, when much time was spent and when sailing was now dangerous because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them. So Luke notes that they had lost much time. He doesn't say, it doesn't indicate exactly what all the reason for that was, other than obviously the slow voyage it took them to get there. They had lost time that way. Perhaps they had lost time in the port for some other reason, but they had lost a lot of time. They were sailing against a seasonal clock. From the account, it seems that there was much discussion about whether or not to press on in the voyage. Now, Luke also notes that sailing had already become dangerous, and that was because the feast had already passed. The feast that he's referring to, of course, was Yom Kippur, the feast of the Day of Atonement. So that would put this time frame in early to mid-October. So this had already passed. Now, according to historical records, sailing on the Mediterranean was considered uncertain or even dangerous from about mid-September to about mid-November. And it was closed from mid-November to early March. It would close for navigation during the winter. And the reason for that was that navigation was near impossible during the wintertime because of the frequent storms, because of the weather conditions of visibility, such as the fog, as well as the overcast, cloudy conditions. In other words, it simply wasn't possible to navigate by the sun and stars during that time, and so navigation was closed. Now, Luke does mention, in fact, when you read on later in the account in verse number 20, he mentions how they hadn't seen the sun and stars in many days. And again, it was at this time when navigation was considered nearly impossible. But Luke says here that Paul admonished them. And that means that Paul strongly urged them. Obviously, Paul had no authority whatsoever. And not only that, Paul was not a passenger as much as he was a prisoner. So he really had no say, but apparently he was at least listened to, though he was not ultimately followed. He admonished them strongly. And in verse 10, we have what Paul had to say. And said unto them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. So Paul here gives a strong advisement against sailing on this late date. Now, Paul was experienced in sea travel. He had survived a number of shipwrecks himself at this point, had made a number of passages over the sea. He probably was not, though, more experienced at sea travel than the owner and captain of the grain ship from Alexandria. Now, he does not indicate here any revelation in this warning. Paul doesn't say that he's had some word from the Lord about this. He doesn't say that he's even received word from an angel or that any prophet or prophecy has come to him concerning this. So I don't think we should take his warning as that sort of a warning. His prediction doesn't really seem to amount to prophecy. It's more a prediction given to his experience and knowledge of conditions and what have you. So we don't know exactly what insight that Paul may have had. And Luke does not indicate any sort of a divine source. But keep this in mind. As we have gone through the book of Acts, and as you read this book, you realize that Paul has been presented over and over again as a reliable character. Paul's discernment and judgment is reliable. I'm not saying it's infallible, but I am saying it is reliable. Of course, where he has had a direct word from the Lord, that is infallible. But Paul is presented as a reliable character. And at various times, Paul has been in disagreement with others. And throughout the account of the book of Acts, we've seen that Paul has voiced his disagreement, and ultimately his judgment and his discernment has been justified in the book of Acts. So there's no reason here to take Paul as an unreliable character, but rather a reliable judgment, though his warning again doesn't seem to be a word from the Lord, but rather Paul's judgment. And he was, of course, right in many ways. He warns them that great loss could come to the ship, to the cargo, and to the passengers if they sail in these conditions. Now, there were many that were on board such a large ship, also a very large cargo of grain, which ultimately was probably viewed as more valuable than even the lives of those that were on board, as is oftentimes the case. Verse number 11. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. So Luke notes here that the centurion, though he obviously did listen to what Paul had to say, he did not take Paul's advice. He chose rather to follow the owner and the captain in their intention to sail. Now, they weren't going to try to make it all the way to Italy, but they were going to try to make it to a better port. Luke explains this in verse 12. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenicia, and there to winter, which is a haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. Now Luke notes here that the majority wanted to sail. He says the more part, the major part, the majority. That's what the word indicates. The majority wanted to sail from the fair havens and to make for Phoenice on Crete. Now, the port of the fair havens was not commodious, or it was not convenient. It was not fit. It wasn't considered suitable for them to winter in. Maybe perhaps because it being such a small place and them thinking that they may not really have adequate provision for such a long stay in this small port. Though they would be sheltered from the winds and the storms as far as that's concerned, but not really probably having the provision that they would need. So they intended to sail to a destination on Crete that was about 40 miles away from the port where they were, to the west, of course. And so that meant they would be making progress toward Italy, but not going all the way there. But again, by trying to sail west, they would be fighting a prevailing west and northwest wind that would make it very difficult, if not impossible, to make their destination. But in the end, it was deemed to be worth the risk. And so they indeed would set sail. So as we think about this opening part here of this account, we notice that Luke has begun this account by drawing attention to the heightening danger for Paul. And one of the things I believe that we glean from this as we read through the book of Acts and we see Paul constantly being in places of danger, even though here he's advising against sailing. But once again, we see that passivity part, that Paul's not really in control. He's not driving these events. He simply is giving his advice, and it is not followed, and it further puts him in great danger. He did have foreboding about leaving the fair havens, but we also have to realize that Paul had to believe that he would survive and make it to Rome, because he did have the promise of the Lord that he would make it to Rome. So Paul knew that he would survive and make it to Rome. Yet Paul is warning them because he feared there could be great loss. Even though he no doubt didn't think he himself would be killed at sea in this attempt. But he certainly believed that it could have been possible that others could have lost their lives, and the ship and the cargo and all of these things could have suffered great loss. And so Paul gave warning about that because he was indeed concerned about the others, his fellow men, his brothers that were with him. Again, Paul did not have a direct word from the Lord advising not to sail at this time. So one of the things I do believe that we learn in these accounts of Paul in particular is that we should never mistake the easy way as being the certain will of God. That we should not, on the other hand, conclude that this is not God's will because it is a hard and difficult and even dangerous way. And I certainly think Paul would teach us to think twice before jumping to those conclusions. Paul was not reckless. In other words, we see Paul's advice here that they not sail from the port. Paul was not reckless. He wasn't just running into danger. But at the same time, he was not avoiding danger. He was not avoiding what was hard and what was difficult. Paul knew that it was God's will for him to make it to Rome. He didn't know how he was going to get there, but he knew that it was God's will for him to make it to Rome. And all along the way, it's been a difficult and dangerous journey. But of course, we remember back to when Paul was warned before going to Jerusalem. And he said, I'm ready to be bound at Jerusalem. I'm ready to die at Jerusalem. He said, I am ready to do this to fulfill his course and to finish his mission.